Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to The Checkout, a podcast produced at WBGO 88.3 in Newark, New Jersey, the home of your world-class public radio station. I'm Simon Rentner. And on today's show, we are actually traveling the world, going down to Miami, Florida, for the 4th Annual Ground Up Music Festival, featuring acts by Snarky Puppy, David Crosby, and this sublime electro percussion ensemble known as PRD Maish. Michael Lee, the bassist and band leader of Snarky Puppy, is our guest today as he'll guide us on a journey exploring his festival. And he's going to talk about that, his secret formula for building something quite special on North Beach. I should also mention that Snarky Puppy, which is sort of like the artist in residence at the festival, is dropping their newest recording entitled Immigrants tomorrow. And we're going to hear a little bit of that music, our exclusive recordings of the music on Immigrants on stage from the Ground Up Music Festival. Plus, you'll want to stay to the very end of the podcast because the 19-piece ensemble that is Snarky Puppy teams up with a Moroccan griot ensemble known as Inov Ganawa on a fan favorite, Lingus, at the very end of the show. And I don't think you'll want to miss it. Our conversation with the impresario, the bassist, Michael League, that's up next.
This is the moment you have been waiting for. Please give huge gratitude to Snarky Puppy.
Michael League, I have a new nickname for you.
Oh God, what was the old one?
it's kind of. It was a little like I liked it for its comedic value, but you know, I called you the Jay-Z of jazz or something. Remember that?
Oh my God.
Sorry, the Jay-Z of smooth jazz. That was the distinction. But now I'm thinking maybe we should call you the Jazz Obama.
I cannot even begin to address that.
Back from your community organizing in Miami.
We love having the festival there.
Well, certainly welcoming in a scenic sense. From North Beach in Miami, back in snowy Brooklyn at the Shape Shifter Lab. Here with Michael League, the Grammy Award-winning Jazz Obama. has a brand new recording called Immigrants.
If you will.
Being a musician these days, you are in a constant, you created a word, immigrants, the state of immigration, which is something you certainly can empathize with. I think musicians all over the world can identify with. But you, Michael League, have formed more explicit partnership with some legendary American protest musicians, namely David Crosby, who appeared at your festival.
Sure.
In fact, why don't we begin the show by hearing a little bit of this very unique performance. David Crosby, Michael League, Michelle Willis, and Becca Stevens.
So much begging. Like a firefly.
she don't. But I have been little girl dreams. I'll turn a stone.
What happened?
Spends all day.
What happened?
On the telephone. Saying no, no, no. She lost her way along a wonderful path. She can't get it.
You just heard a beautiful recording of Regina performed by Michael League, David Crosby, Becca Stevens, and Michelle Willis at this year's Ground Up Music Festival.
So here we are, and it's not inconceivable that a jazz festival in the United States could go on for 50 years at the Newport Jazz Festival for one. Let's fast forward 50 years from now.
Oh, I haven't thought about
that.
What
does North Beach look like? Was this a part of any of your calculation with finding this place the home of this festival?
No, we chose this place because the festival director, Paul Lehrer, is from Miami, and he was very confident about our ability to throw a great festival on these grounds, and he has a lot of connections with the city that could help with permitting and getting grants and things like this because we have no major sponsors, you know, and we intentionally avoid doing that because we want to have control and we want it to be our party. Not only was I not thinking about 50 years in the future, I wasn't even thinking about 1 year in the future because my plan originally was to move the festival to a different city every year. But it went so well the first year, Paul said, you should really consider keeping it here. And I do not regret that decision at all. And in 50 years, if we can still have that festival right there with the same two stages, with the same number of people walking in the door, I would be super happy. I don't want to add stages. I don't want to grow the audience. I really just want it to be what it is now, but better every year.
It is just an interesting concept, though. If you think about Miami, that will be the ground zero for climate change in terms of cities in the United States that will be affected by it.
It's true. Yeah, I hope in 50 years there is a space for the festival there because Miami is seeing really dramatic consequences of climate change.
Which brings us to another moment quickly. There's this one other song that I thought was apropos, I guess, for where we're here. Vagrants of Venice, which is penned by David Crosby and Becca Stevens jointly.
Boat-born vagrants fishing endless, aimless in the flooded palace with
an imaginary tale 100 years from now in Venice, when Venice will be underneath water once the polar ice caps have melted.
Yeah, I mean, David is very cinematic in the way that he crafts lyrics. And Becca and he used this process for that tune that I've been using with David on both the records that I produced for him, which is basically you just give him a topic and then you just ask him to speak. And he does like a stream of consciousness. He doesn't kind of filter anything that he's saying or like try to craft a story. He just gives images. He gives you this beautiful stone slab and the rough markings, and then you kind of chisel out the sculpture, you know. And he did this, and he kind of painted this kind of water world-esque kind of imagery, and Becca put it into this beautiful story with beautiful language, and Michelle and I kind of chipped in on a few things when it was about 80-90% done. I think it might actually be my favorite set of lyrics that David has ever put together. It's really so evocative.
All very peaceful now. They have forgotten how. Greed used to drive us to fight and to climb. Wild people.
Vagrants of Venice from David Crosby, Here If You Listen, released on Michael League's Ground Up Music label. League is also the curator and founder of the 4th annual Ground Up Music Festival in Florida, and we're speaking with him today.
The unknown bands that you bring to the stage that virtually have zero fan bases in Miami specifically, yet somehow you are able to orchestrate and get these bands here, which is a feat unto itself. I mean, as a programmer, as a booker, that are always crunching numbers, you're almost not even factoring that into the equation when you bring La Perla or this next band that I want to feature here that absolutely blew my mind, Pierre de Maiche.
The first time we went to Brazil, my friend Jeff Coffin, who's a woodwind player from the Dave Matthews Band and before that from Bela Fleck and the Flecktones, connected me with a flute player named Carlos Malta, who was in Hermeto Pascoal's band for like 16 years. And through Carlos, our kind of world opened up in Brazil. He introduced us to all of the baddest musicians in folkloric music and in modern music, you know. And we invited him to come play with his group, which is like a two-flute, three-percussion group. They were there at the first year Ground Up Music Festival, called Carlos Malta and Pifi Mudeno. And out of this kind of relationship, specifically with a guy named Bernardo Aguiar, who's a pandeiro player in Carlos's band, Bernardo wanted to start a band that was incorporating Brazilian music with kind of modern influence. And
pandeiro, for those that don't know, it's sort of like a more sophisticated version of a tambourine that can
offer... Sounds like a whole drum set. So Bernardo has had this duo for many years called the Pandeiro Hepiniki Duo. It's him playing pandeiro and his friend Gabriel playing Hepiniki. And, I mean, they were doing whole concerts with just two percussion instruments. Really amazing. And then they decided to add, like, four more percussionists and a woodwind section and a guy who's playing, like, a synth vibraphone. And they released their debut album on Ground Up.
How do we bring them to New York?
That's a great question, and the answer is that you don't, because no one would buy tickets, because no one knows who they are, because the music culture in a city at a club relies upon notoriety to sell tickets. What we're trying to do at the Ground Up Music Festival is the exact opposite. We're trying to create a festival whose name people trust. And if they trust the name of the festival, they don't have to trust the names of the bands. So this is our goal, is to earn enough trust from an audience to the point where we can bring whoever we want and the same number of tickets will be sold every year because people trust us with the curation. And a really interesting thing that I've noticed about the festival is that the crowd doesn't react any better to the more famous people than to the less famous people. You know, and sometimes we've had totally unknown bands get a much bigger response than some of the most famous artists we've invited to the festival. And this to me is a really, really good indicator. And I want to move really far in this direction to the point where I would like to say that in 5 years, we won't ever even announce the artists at the festival and that people will just buy tickets blind, come to the festival, and experience it blind. I think it would be great to never even say the names of the people you're going to see until they're walking on stage. It'd be cool.
The other thing about this festival that warms my heart is you never program two bands at the same time, which is a rare thing at a festival too. You allow everybody at the festival to see each band equally. Mm. You're striking at some kind of truth that everybody can enjoy, yeah, rather than programming something for everybody.
I program the festival as if I'm going to watch every minute of every show. That's the goal, right? So that if you do have those people, and I say if, but actually I think the majority of our audience sees every minute of every gig. I try to create the experience from that perspective. So it's like, what would I want to see after seeing Andrew Bird? What would I want after Leila Hathaway? What would I want after a Colombian percussion ensemble, La Perla, you know? And thinking about it in that way, thinking about when the sun's going down. Rather than thinking about it like, oh, okay, I want to make sure that every kind of person can come to the festival and have a good time, I think you actually make a very bad bed doing that. You know, I think it's important to recognize that every decision you make as a curator of anything leads you farther and farther along that road. So once you start to appease people with something, the only people that will continue to come are people who seek appeasement, right? I mean, so it's like, if we just program it from the beginning, like, these are the groups that I like, the people that I believe in, the kind of quality level that I feel like needs to be represented, the aesthetic that I think needs to be represented, then you'll just attract people who want more of that thing. But if they don't like it, there's a beach right there, you know? And I would rather have it be that than if they don't like it, they can go see another band. Because I feel like each band deserves the respect of playing on their own and having an opportunity to express what they want to express. And I tell all the bands before they come, do not play them your festival set, which is a thing we say a lot as musicians. We're like, is it going to be like a festival set where you give them all the bells and whistles and the high energy stuff? I encourage the bands, play the deep stuff. Like, play the stuff that you feel like you always want to play that most audiences won't be into, because this audience, to me, is the secret weapon of the festival, actually.
Michael Leake here joins us. He has a new recording with Snarky Puppy, the 19-piece on the record, maybe 100-piece in real life, musical collective, Immigrants. You're proud of this record actually being dirtier, right, Michael Leake, though? That was something you were trying to achieve?
Yeah. I mean, I think we made Culture Vulture, which was a studio record after making live records for years and years and years. And we went back to the same studio with the same musicians. And there's a danger in that, because you start to relive the experience that you've had there before, and you run the risk of the sound being very similar to the one before. And so we made a couple very strong decisions to make it different. First of which was that we had all three drummers playing on every song, but never at the same time. On Chavi.
Which is a great tune. What is this in? This is like
Chavi is in 6/8 or 4/4, depending on how you want to think about it. The groove that we're playing, I think when Moroccans are feeling it, they feel it in 4, but the percussion groove is technically a 6/8 groove. So on Chavi, for example, Jason, JT Thomas, is playing the verses. When it gets to the chorus, Jameson Ross picks it up. And then when we get to the solo section, Larnell is playing. So you get three really different perspectives on the same groove. And I think when you record like that, things are less clean. There's more mistakes. It's a little fuzzier. It feels like humans. We'll be right back. I think Snarky Puppy, because the players tend to be so self-conscious and conscientious, you know, I think that we would sooner have a problem being too clean than too dirty. So I try to help that balance out.
So who's the musician you can credit to in your formidable ensemble for dirtying up the sound the best?
Are you asking me to say who's the least precise musician in my band on the radio? I actually
framed the question as a compliment.
I would say Bobby Sparks. He's a keyboardist in the band. And
clavinet player.
And yeah, he plays a lot of clav on the record. And I've never heard him get so inside of his head that he's not being expressive. And I think a lot of the guys that went to North Texas, you know, we all went there together. And, you know, sometimes we get so deep into the mechanics of what's going on, like we have to kind of shake ourselves out of it, you know, to really feel expressive. But I've never heard Bobby do that. Bobby is 100% funky 100% of the time. There have been moments where he was playing in a different key. He knew it, you know what I mean? But it still feels so right, you know? And I think that's how music is supposed to work. You're supposed to analyze the music. You're not supposed to make music out of the analysis, you know?
Well, let's listen to Chonks. And you worked this out on Bobby Sparks' clavinet, I understand.
That's right, yeah. We were in Germany, I think, during a sound check, and we had just finished and the band left, and I just wanted to play his clavinet, and I was messing around, and that's how I came up with the groove.
When inspiration strikes, you just have to take advantage of it sometimes as an artist, right? It comes in mysterious ways and places.
I hate everything about my phone except voice memos. You know, to me, it's saved my life so many times. Just if I hear a sound that I love or I come up with a rhythm or a melody or, you know, sometimes I'm in a department store and like a Katy Perry song is playing, but I feel beat one in the wrong place and the groove to me feels better that way. Whatever, like I just record everything. And then when I can sit down and have time to write, I have like a vault of ideas to start with, you know.
Can you share with us the last thing you recorded on your phone?
The groove is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's cool. This is when I was driving. That one's dumb. Ooh, laundry guitar drum groove? What does that mean? So the name of this voice note is Laundry Room Drum Groove, to match the video on the phone from the Crosby Tour on acoustic guitar. 1, 2, 3, 4. I guess that's in 10-4, I guess.
It sounds like a laundry machine. It's kind of amazing.
Maybe that's what that means.
Yeah. Do you remember where you were when you recorded that?
I think because I was doing laundry in the venue on the David Crosby tour that we did in December. I was in the venue doing laundry, and I just left soundcheck, so I had a guitar on, and I went to check to see if the clothes were dry. And then I think I came up with something in that laundry room, and then I recorded it on my phone, and then when I was taking the clothes out of the dryer, I came up with a drum groove for it. And that's what you just heard.
the creative process. Don't deny it. You can be anywhere. It's just really inspiring because it's like you don't have to be in an inspiring place like Miami necessarily to get good ideas.
Yeah, and also it's kind of unfair to expect that in the one moment that you have time to write music, that you're gonna, that like the muse is going to descend and you're gonna be inspired in that moment. That's like, that's just not fair to expect that of the muse or of yourself. It's better to just be prepared for the moment when you have free time, you know?
Well, did you hear the story behind David Crosby's performance of Neil Young's composition, famous protest song, Ohio?
I think the thing happened, and Crosby called Neil and said, "Well, basically, you need to write a song."
They were
this,
hanging
right?
out on a porch, and I think it was like Life magazine. It was the photo, the infamous photo, of the woman crouched down over, I'm assuming, a dead body from the Kent State shootings from 1970 that spread like wildfire. Mm. Neil Young wrote the tune on the spot.
That's right. Yeah.
And then one day later, they were in the recording studio, and then David Crosby's most famous protest song, they're created in a matter of 10 days from beginning to end.
I think, the way that David told to me, or that I heard Neil say it in an interview, is basically that Neil wrote it immediately and Crosby said, "We're recording it tomorrow. You know, like, we have to do this right now." What if you knew her and found her dead on the ground? How can you run when you know?
Is there any other moments like that in your creative process, Michael League, that maybe you haven't told before or thought about, where just this bolt of lightning kind of inspiration that generated something that at least you're very proud of?
I mean, I think there's a lot of moments in which a song comes to you in its entirety very quickly. You know, like one of the tunes on Immigrants, the very last song, which is called Even Us, I wrote actually on the plane between Dallas and El Paso, which is like a 45-minute flight. And I got on the plane and it came out and we landed and the song was done. You know, I mean, I demoed it on Logic in 40 minutes. And these tend to be my favorite tunes that I've written, the ones that happen the fastest. But there are other tunes that take me 9 months to write, or a year and a half to write. And I think when we talk about this stuff, you want to believe that when you're in the process, it's like this magical process, this magical moment. You were inspired and it came out and it became a work of artistic greatness. But actually, it's not really like that. Any song can end up being the best song that you wrote. It doesn't have to be the one you wrote in 10 minutes. It can be the one that took you 2 years to write. It can be the one that you didn't like until it was mastered. Or it could be one that you still don't like. That's happened to a lot of artists, where the song that they're most famous for, they never liked it. The reason why I bring that up is because I think a lot of us as songwriters, we tend to kind of cast judgment on ourselves at different points during the process. Is this really a strong enough song? It should have come faster if it were strong. Or like, I don't know about this melody, you know, I've tried 15 different melodies and if any of them were good, I would have known right away. There are songs that we think are the strong ones now, but when we're done mixing them, maybe the ones that we thought were strong are weak. And you really don't know. And so it's important to not kind of throw things away too soon and to really give everything a chance to breathe and to be great, because you never know which one will be the one.
Well, thank you for spending some time with us here, Michael, and definitely tickets have already gone on sale for next year's Ground Up Music Festival. Go into their website and you can find out ticket information about that and his new record, Immigrants, drops tomorrow. Thank you, Michael League.
Thank you so much.
Even Us. This is certainly a melancholic affair, one of his favorite compositions. You can find this song on Snarky Puppy's new recording that drops tomorrow called Immigrants. Well, we're not just going to leave you all sad here with this joyous encounter with the Ground Up Music Festival's curator and Snarky Puppy's bassist. So I wanted to go out with another recording from Ground Up. A huge thanks to our audio engineer Nick Hard and everybody at the Ground Up Music Festival for making this program possible. Richard Straub, Rob Krauser, thank you all. So as I mentioned before, Snarky Puppy performed three consecutive nights, kind of as like the house resident band during the festival. And right here, we're going to hear them close out this year's festival with a fan favorite. And it's a unique collaboration. Snarky invited the Moroccan Griot Ensemble, Inov Ganawa, on stage for this performance of Lingus. I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah. For the Malam, Hassan Ben Jaffer, in Afghanawa, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for celebrating with us this year. We'll see you at the Alexander. You've been wonderful, Ground Up Festival. See you next year.
Lingus in Afghanawa teaming up with Snarky Puppy, closing down this year's fourth annual Ground Up Music Festival. And if you like what you hear, well, tickets are now on sale for Ground Up 2020. And definitely make sure to check out Snarky Puppy's new recording, Immigrants, that drops tomorrow. And watch their new video, their music video, Bad Kids to the Back. If you want to learn more information about the Ground Up Music Festival and Snarky Puppy's new recording, go to our website, check out jazz.org. That's where we archive all of our shows. And definitely make sure to follow us on social media, the Checkout from WBGO on Facebook, at Checkout Jazz on Twitter, and I'm at Simon Rettner on Instagram. I'd like to give a special thanks to our production assistant, Anthony Nieves. The Checkout is a production of WBGO Newark. I'm Simon Rettner. Thanks for checking us out.